As we approach the holiday season, have you thought of sending a care package? Troopster makes it simple and easy. Send a care package to a loved one serving overseas. Founded by Navy veteran Chelsea Mandello. Hear her story and how she started the nonprofit Troopster. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
All right, Chelsea Mandello, founder of Troopster. Thanks for being here with Veteran on the Move, and we're looking forward to hearing your entrepreneurial nonprofit story. Before we do that, take us back and tell us what you did in the Navy.
Yeah, thanks so much, Joe, for having me on. So in the military, I was a U.S. Navy photographer. So I was a photojournalist. And when I joined, they really got me to hit the ground running. 2 weeks in, they sent me to Japan. And I was on my first mission of writing stories and sending photos back and sending it out to syndicates such as USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and really trying to encompass the military story. And for a good 3 years, I was perpetually deployed. And it was an awesome adventure. I got the experience of traveling around 13 countries. I hit 9 different Navy platforms, so different Navy ships. And I was just always moving. I would be in Hong Kong for Halloween, and then I would bounce to Malaysia, and then I'd go over to Tokyo, and then I would go hit Rota, Spain. And my job was to tell the Navy's story. And it was an awesome job.
Wow, no kidding. That does sound awesome. Travel all over the place. Were you mostly independent on your own, or do you have like a team you traveled with?
Well, I would go out with a team, but then we would break up into our own individual segments. So a lot of times, even though I would go out with about 5 people, we would be split up and then I would be traveling and taking photos on my own.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Okay. So, all right. I gotta ask you about this.
Yeah.
24 years in the Marine Corps, I learned and I used to tell everybody, don't ever, ever, ever trust a journalist. No offense. But, you know, they're always looking for the scammy little controversial story. And, you know, they become your friend, get you to talking. And then all of a sudden the story comes out and it's like, whoa, you know, that guy spent 2 weeks with us and that's what he has to say? How did he come up with that? But of course, those are not Navy journalists I'm talking about. Those are not military journalists in the military. So,
right.
Did you ever experience, like you said, you sent out potential stories for USAA and other news organizations? How often did they even publish your stuff if it was like written in a positive light? Because I'm sure, and I'm curious to how you feel about that. Like, were you like, were sure if you wrote a story that was like negative or exposed something controversial, was that kind of stuff shot down? Or because you're supposed to be telling the Navy story, which theoretically should be a good story, right?
Yeah. So it worked backwards. You're right. Yeah. There are just certainly times where you shouldn't, there are always times where maybe you shouldn't trust the journalist because they're always there for the story. Mm-hmm. But with military journalists, we're there to tell the military story and really the good side of the military.
Exactly.
So we stray completely away from anything negative.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an opposite bias where, you know, a normal civilian reporter is there to get a story and obviously the juicier the better. But for the military stories, the least juicy as possible, the better. Hmm. So we would go out looking for community relations events, events where the military was there for disaster relief or helping rebuild a village or there for joint efforts working with other foreign militaries. So we were there more for the positive impact of the military.
And did you have much interaction with other civilian professional journalists? And how did they view you, knowing that you were almost always going to be publishing a positive military story?
Yes. Yeah. We worked very closely with civilian journalists, and we're all very cordial with each other, and we'll sometimes we'll share notes, or if everyone's supposed to be there together for the same interview, we'll help each other out. But it is a different mentality. I don't think they ever really saw us quite as actual journalists, because yeah. You know, some of us will come in and we're right out of high school and we're working for the military, and then you're working with other civilian journalists who've been doing this for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, I can see that. So you're out of the Navy now. What was your transition like out of the Navy, and what were your plans, and how did that go for you?
You know, it was kind of a hard and fast movement. So I actually founded Troopster while I was still serving active duty. Yeah, in 2013, I was serving on my seventh ship, and it was in the Mediterranean. We were doing anti-piracy operations, and I was there for a couple of months. And because of the area that we were in, you know, sometimes it's obviously not the safest place to be. So by the time we'll receive something like mail, which you really have to coordinate, it's not as easy as just ordering from Amazon. It shows up, you know, on your front door. So, but
yeah, so, no guaranteed two day prime delivery on the boat.
Right. Oh yeah. Oh, I wish. So by the time we would actually get something like a care package, you would open this thing up and you really need everything that's inside, and everything in it had gone bad. And it wasn't just me. I mean, I call them heartbreaks in a box, because so many of us were getting these care packages, opening them up and finding what should have been an apple strudel or chocolate chip cookies, or, you know, something that was sent intact and with love, but did not show up that way. So I, on that deployment, I remember, I stayed up for a couple of days and, just started sketching out on my spare time, what could a care package company look like? How could I make it better? And when I got back from deployment, I started doing the research for 2 years. And in 2015, when I hit shore duty, so I still had 3 years left, that was when I officially launched Troopster. So I was able to run it part-time. It was very, very challenging, I'll admit. I would work 24 hours, you know, stand watch or stand duty, and then I'd get the next day off, and I would go home exhausted, ready to go to bed, and I would have to fill orders or to work on the website. And then I would have, you know, meetings. I had to get the word out about Troopster. And some days, the only time that I could really do it was during my lunch breaks, which, you know, I only had an hour, and you can't legally, for the JAG, you can't meet in uniform, right? Because that's an outside entity. There's a lot of rules there. So I would be wearing a professional outfit under my uniform, and I would quickly go to this meeting, and as I'm driving, I would take off my uniform so I could be in civilian attire for this meeting. And then 45 minutes later, I'd have to say thank you and quickly rush back while putting my combat boots back on. And you just, I really had to go with the flow and make it happen. So,
yeah, I was going to ask, while running, starting up a business while still on active duty, did you run into any resistance from your command, or felt like you had to hide what you were doing, or just kind of keep it on the DL, you know?
You know, I got very, very lucky. I had a wonderful chain of command, and I was extremely upfront with them. So I had worked for 2 years, from 2013 to 2015, developing a business plan. And I'd gone to, so the military has, they actually have entrepreneurial classes that are hosted by Morale, Welfare, and Recreation. And they're called boots to business classes.
Yeah.
So you ask your command for permission. They'll send you there. It's a 1 to 2 day class. So I had been very upfront and open with my idea. And by the time I was ready to launch, I went to my senior leadership and I gave them this business plan, told them what I wanted to do, and promised them that it wouldn't interfere, that, you know, that I could run it, and that if anything did happen, I would keep the chain of command apprised. And they were extremely supportive. They gave me the blessing. And really, I think that it's because of their support that I was able to do so well.
Well, that's awesome. Because a lot of times, you know, I remember, you know, when I was on active duty, I was messing around with various entrepreneurial ventures, and mm-hmm. I always tried to keep it, you know, below the radar as much as possible. And it's kind of one of those things, you know, beg for ask permission or beg forgiveness, you know, because I'm like, okay, if I ask and they say no, then I'm done. I can't continue. Right. But if I just keep it on the DL, and as long as it doesn't interfere with anything. But it is kind of a tightrope to walk when you're still on active duty and you're trying to maneuver and get something done. You got to be careful. And
And I'd say play it by ear, definitely. Because I've certainly, you know, since I traveled around a lot, I saw a lot of commands that would not have been as helpful and open to the idea.
Right.
So it's
sometimes it's because they're jealous.
Yeah.
They really want to start a business themselves, but they don't have the idea. And they're like, well, I'm not going to let anybody else do it.
Yeah. I've ran into people like that too. So yeah, you really just definitely play the situation by ear.
I mean, this has probably been a year, 2 years ago. We interviewed a Navy SEAL and he talked about, you mentioned the JAG. He had gone to the JAG to get permission to either write a book or start a website or something like that. And like 2 years later, you know, all that controversy came out with Osama bin Laden and everything. And so the Navy SEAL command went on a witch hunt and they grabbed everybody they could that had gone public with anything. And him included. And he was standing tall in front of the man. All of a sudden he's like, wait a minute. I think I went to the JAG and I think the command signed off and said it was okay. Hold on. Let me. And he went digging around and he found the piece of paper that the command had signed and had JAG approval. And he's like, does this help? And it totally got him out of everything. I mean, cause he had asked permission first and, you know, just had just kind of forgotten about it. He wasn't really doing any of the controversial stuff, but he just got dragged in with the rest of it. So you do need to be careful. I mean, you just don't really know what could come of it, or you're out there and all of a sudden you're out in public and, you know, you mentioned not being in uniform if you're going to meet officially, and all of a sudden someone snaps a picture and one of those journalists is hanging around, and next thing it's in the base newspaper, or the local paper out in town, and some commander sees it and is like, who is this? And what are they doing?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And usually, so that I'm outside of Norfolk. So we've got Naval Station Norfolk here, and you can schedule just office hours to go to the base JAG and just pick their brains. I mean, a lot of times they're pretty busy, but they never mind just doing a correspondence by email, asking, you know, pretty quick questions that you might have if you want to start a business or if you want to write a book. So they are pretty helpful and they're there for that to help you out.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, we're back talking with Chelsea Mandello, founder of Troopster. You send care packages to military members overseas. So, Chelsea, when you first started, you had your idea. You probably played around with it a little bit and, you know, getting things going. But real early on, you decided, well, I'm going to need to stand up a legit nonprofit. Walk us through a little bit about the fun in doing that.
Yeah. So I tell you what, I love what I do. I mean, I feel like I have the absolute best job in the world. I get to connect moms, dads, spouses with their troops. They can make personalized care packages, add photos, send it directly to someone they know overseas. Or if you don't know someone, then we connect to the community with someone who's overseas who needs help. They might not have friends and family taking care of them. So I love my job and getting to do all of this. But Troopster actually started initially as a for-profit company, as an e-commerce. I didn't know at the time that you could launch. I didn't know anything about nonprofits, like at all. But I had heard about business licenses and starting a business. So I initially thought that that was the route I should go just naturally too. So I took a lot of breaks in which I would take leave, and I would research via the Small Business Association, which is a wonderful resource. They have everything you can think of there, and you can print off all of these information pages. So I would just spend lunches and mini vacations and weekends reading up on how to get the licenses, file with the SEC. I did a lot of research to make sure I had my ducks in a row. And after I launched, I was a for-profit for about a year and a half when I started getting, and things, you know, things were going pretty well. I had pivoted my product. So initially I just had 400 items on the site. It was really overwhelming for customers. So then we started offering pre-made care packages, and those were a little bit better. And then we found kind of the sweet spot that wouldn't break the bank for people, but that were really affordable. So for anyone, if you're starting a business, don't be so in love with your idea that you aren't willing to pivot. But about a year and a half into business, I started getting all of these letters, and I would open them up, and they would be from troops who didn't have anyone, but they had friends who were deployed with them, and they were getting all these Troopster care packs from their families. And so they had written me letters, and they were wanting to know if ever we just sent out free care packages, because, you know, they didn't have anyone, they really needed some. It was a small business, you know, and
hey, Chelsea, I got a quick question. Being a bit of an e-commerce guy myself, my wife and I have an Amazon business. You said initially you had 400 items on your website. So and this was still in the for-profit mode, right? So you populated your website with 400 things that were good to box up and ship overseas and non-perishable and, you know, stuff that you'd identified that people actually need and will survive the trip. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Initially.
But they had to go through and pick them and kind of put their own package together, and then you would box up whatever they selected and ship it out for them?
Right. Yes. And, we do all the running around. Right. So they would pay for just the items and then the shipping based on weight. But we would do all of the running around and fill out the customs forms for them.
So a very cool idea. So, but you were able to help fund it because people were actually buying the items. So that's a cool idea in and of itself. But what you're about to cover, the pivot, and also you've got fans, you've got an audience, and you're getting letters, and people are telling you what they really need. So now you're telling us how you responded to that. This is crucial, because you're exactly right. You start a business thinking you're going to fill this need, and all of a sudden you start getting information, feedback saying, well, you know what we really need is this, and it's something you didn't really think about. And as a business owner, you got to be open to that, because that's truly where the niche is, when they tell you what they want.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So always listen to your customers. But we started receiving these letters, and I started kicking around the idea of, okay, let's try and just send out donation packs. And the first year I put together a donation pack party, and it was going to be for Christmas, and we were going to send out 500 donation care packages to troops who were deployed overseas. And I was able to sign up 40 businesses in the local Norfolk area who helped me out. And we ended up getting about 25,000 snacks and toiletries. And we had over 200 people just in the surrounding area, and some who drove down from DC. And it was an amazing turnout. We packed all 500 of these boxes in under an hour and a half. But I learned as we had been collecting snacks that businesses and organizations didn't really want to help you if you weren't a nonprofit, if you didn't have the tax write-off ability.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really, really hard trying to get all of those items. So the next year, I started working on how to actually start a nonprofit. And I went and found a tax-exempt lawyer, and I went to the Veterans Business Outreach Center. It's a program offered for military members and for veterans who are interested in starting either a nonprofit or some sort of a business entity. And they were great. They really helped me to get started. And so at first I was running these two entities. I had Troopster, the for-profit side where it's an e-commerce platform where anyone who had a troop could go online, pick a personalized care package, and then we would take care of everything. And then I had Troopster Donations, which was completely separate entity, separate website. And if you wanted to donate or you wanted to adopt a troop, that was where you could do it. So
in the Veterans Business Outreach Center, was that on base?
It was not. No, it was out in town.
Oh, okay. What organization runs that, or are they the own organization?
Yeah. No, so they're run by the Small Business Administration, but then they also work. Yeah, they work closely though with the MWR. So they're the ones that run the Boots to Business class.
Oh, okay. So yeah, the SBA working with the MWR. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. All right.
Right, and they're called the Veterans Business Outreach Center.
Excellent.
And just kind of a segue, they will help you do anything. They have classes for getting your SWAM certification, which is small women-owned businesses, getting your SWAM certification. They'll help you out if you need help getting a 501c3 or if you need just help getting a business license. They have representatives there that will help you from just getting a business plan together all the way up to after you've launched. I mean, I'm still working with them today, and it's been 4 years.
Yeah. And so you went through the whole process and eventually got your determination letter from the IRS that said you are now a legit nonprofit.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a big deal. It takes a long time to get that.
It was. And it was a happy day. It was a very happy day because then we could officially collect donations. And so then the second year.
Hey, Chelsea, I wanted to ask you, I don't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to add to that. Did you ever run into or hear of a scenario where you could get sponsored by a nonprofit that currently exists?
No, you can be sponsored by a nonprofit?
Yeah. So an option that could have been available or was available to you. And this is something for anybody out there that's kind of in a fledgling nonprofit scenario where they're not there yet or they're not quite ready for that yet. You can have an existing nonprofit sponsor you in your organization, and you can take money under their name and they can legitimately give the money over to you. And so the people that donate to you, even though you're not a legit nonprofit yet, they're donating to you, but they're actually donating it to you through the existing nonprofit. And there's some IRS forms you have to fill out, and the nonprofit, you have to agree to have somebody sponsor you. It's really a sponsorship. They sponsor you. Mm-hmm. They bring you up underneath their umbrella, so they obviously can be held accountable, and there's a little bit of liability on their part. So it's got to be the trusting relationship there, but I'd never heard of that until a few years ago and somebody had mentioned it to me. And so if you have someone that's already running a nonprofit and you want to get up, and it's because sometimes it can take a year or two to get the determination letter from the IRS before you're legit, as you well know. And, and you can't really accept tax-free donations in the meantime. Well, that's a way to get around it. It's kind of like a bridge loan, if you will. Until your house is built, you can get nonprofit or tax-free money for your organization. You just have to get another nonprofit that's willing to sponsor you.
I had never heard of that. Yeah. So that would have been a great option.
Yeah. It's like a little known nonprofit trick that's out there, but you got it. I mean, it's not easy to find a nonprofit that's willing to sponsor you, because you know they've got to trust you and they got to be willing to
right.
to take responsibility for it and all that. So, but it's definitely a really good option if you have that available to you.
Oh yeah! Wow, that's I'd never heard of that one. But you're right. It was a long process, and there's two forms you can choose. You can either go with the short form, the 1023EZ, or the full 1023 long form. And you know, one's 6 months, but it's based on I think under 10,000 worth of expected donations, and then the other one, you know, it can take up to a year and a half.
Wow!
So it was certainly a long process, but when we got it, we had already been making the preparations. And when I say we, I mean, I had volunteers at that point. I had a volunteer coordinator. I'd really built up the hype in the city of Norfolk for this organization that was coming. So we'd gathered the people, we had everything ready. And so for the second year, for the second annual pack party, we ended up doing 1,200 care packages to troops who were deployed for Christmas.
Wow.
And then, it was amazing. And we still somehow, we had, 40,000 snacks, and we still somehow packed them in under 2 hours.
That's
so,
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And, now moving into our third year, we've just started doing some new things, where we held packing events every month, and and businesses or organizations sponsored a month pack party. So each month would be a new organization would get to sponsor it, their employees, or sometimes if a school sponsored that packing event, students would get to come out and help volunteer pack the care packages and write notes to the troops. So it was really going in a great direction on both sides for the donations. And that's kind of where my heart belonged. But I was still running also this for-profit entity.
Mm.
And then around summertime, I entered into an accelerator, which an accelerator is a program where businesses basically pitch, and they, if you succeed, you get to go into this accelerator, which has the goal of helping your business grow.
Yeah.
So for 3 months, you live wherever this accelerator is, and they're going to have lawyers, they're going to have financiers, they're going to have so many people and mentors come in, take a look at your business, tell you what you're doing wrong and how you can be better. And they coach you and they teach you. And it's always just a great opportunity for businesses who are either in the startup phase or in the survival stage, which is where we are now. And I had won the local accelerator program, the 757 Accelerate.
Cool.
Yeah, it was an awesome day, really great opportunity. It was between
757 Accelerate. Is that the area code?
It is.
Area code for Norfolk?
For Norfolk.
Yeah, I thought so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a good friend, Norfolk phone number.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, we are the inaugural cohort. So if you are listening to this and you're in the Norfolk area, the 757 Accelerator is a great program. There was over 100 local businesses. And when I say local, I mean all the way up to Richmond and down to North Carolina, who entered into it. And only 5 businesses were selected to go through the 12-week program. And it was during the program that I had a financier, someone who he's an investor, look at both of my programs. And we really got to talking about Troopster and Troopster donations and how much I love doing both. And yet it was really pulling me in different directions, because it's really hard running just one company, but then doing two at the same time.
Yeah.
So this gentleman did a pro forma statement. He really looked at everything for me, and he came up to me and he said, "Well, why are you even a for-profit?" And I remember I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean? I've got the nonprofit, but this, you've got people sending a personal care pack to someone they know. How can you be anything other? And he said, well, you don't have to be a for-profit. And at first I didn't believe him. I went and I had lawyers and all of these people look at it and try to convince me why I had to be a for-profit, and no one really could. Mm-hmm. And so after a lot of deliberation, I came back to him and I said, oh my gosh, you know what? You're right. This we could do all of this as a nonprofit. And it just entirely, my world entirely changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question. You're fully nonprofit now, right? Can I still go on Troopster and buy a care package for somebody and send it overseas? Can I buy it myself?
You can. And here's how that works.
Yeah. How's the money flow?
Here's how it goes. So if you are a for-profit company, so you're a normal business, mm-hmm. and you make that purchase, built in there between the wholesale and the retail price, there's a profit margin, right? Mm-hmm. And the profit margin helps, you know, keep the lights on and pay employees and all of those good things. Well, instead of it being a profit margin, it's now a donation margin. So that margin still helps us keep the lights on and pay the employees. But then past that, it gets to roll over and helps us send more donation care packages to troops who don't have someone sending them a pack.
So I think I'm purchasing a care package for my loved one overseas, but I'm actually donating money and still getting to choose what they get.
Right. You're doing both. Yeah. That's cool. You get to take care of your troop and someone else's.
That's awesome. Do you know, like, do you mind if I ask, mm-hmm. do you know what the percentage is? Like how many people buy versus what you donate, or do you track that, or how many, maybe it's just like how many care packages do you sell for lack of a better term, per year?
Yeah. Oh, per year. Okay.
Yeah, or however you track it, or you know, on a monthly basis, or
yeah. So we normally track it as far as the sales go on a monthly basis.
Okay,
which we sell about 63, ignoring the seasons, because during the holidays it's a lot more.
Sure.
Usually they'll shoot up, but so. Normal sales just throughout the year, we end up sending about 700.
Oh, okay. But,
yeah. But then for donations, we send out, I would say four times that as of this year, especially, because we really started ramping up on having, you know, monthly packing events and sponsoring units. And mm-hmm. we started working with, the Chaplains Corps and the Military Working Dogs. So this year, especially, we really started ramping up on our donation events.
Now, do you take a salary?
I do not.
Don't.
Not yet.
So
no,
you're doing this full time, right?
That. I am. Yeah.
All right. So how are you paying the bills?
So that margin goes to pay for everyone but me. It's funny. So I have one employee and she's amazing. She's just such a good person. And I always joke with her because she's the only paid employee who's there. but I'm working on, for 2019, actually expanding, to have more staff and to officially give myself a paycheck for the first time. And I'm also developing a board, moving into 2019, now that I have everything set up exactly the way, you know, a good system, a good process for how we do things, how we purchase wholesale, I wanted to bring in a board that would believe in the Troopster mission and that would want to help us grow to become an internationally known and recognized brand.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really done a lot of vetting for individuals who could be on my executive and advisory board.
And that's an important process. You're hiring your bosses.
Yes.
And, you know, just ask Steve Jobs. You can start a company and then the board of directors can turn on you and they can fire you. So choose your bosses wisely.
Very wisely.
Well, Chelsea, yes. Unfortunately, we're getting close to the end of our time here. How do we find Troopster? And then you've also got a special event coming up in November that you wanted to talk about.
Yes. Yeah. So first, the Troopster site, you can go to Troopster, that's TROOPSTER.org. And you can visit our site through there, Troopster.org, and see all of the care packs. You can adopt troops through there. And then coming up next month is our third annual pack party. I mentioned that each November we open it up to the community and we have a big volunteer event in which people can come out. They can help make care packages. This year, our goal is to send over 2,000 care packages in one fell swoop to troops who are going to be deployed for Christmas. So we've got that coming up, and we're trying to raise money, which will help pay for the shipping of the care packages to send them overseas. So we're selling popcorn tins, or we're just asking for basic donations of anyone who really wants to help that process.
Wow, that's awesome. 2,000. All right.
Yes.
Well, Chelsea, we've talked about some real great things, and you dropped several golden nuggets in the profit versus nonprofit world, and hopefully it's been of some value to listeners. I'm sure it has. I do want to give you the last word. If you're talking to somebody out there, you know, like who was in your scenario where maybe you're still on active duty and you've got this business idea and you want to get it started and hopefully transition into that when you get out, what kind of advice would you have for them in getting started?
Yeah, you know, I would say definitely use your resources. Use the Veterans Business Outreach Center and the SBA. They offer mentors who are, some of them can be a veteran mentor who has been exactly where you are now, who knows the pitfalls, who knows the struggles of being in the military, and who knows what it's like to start your business. And you can find these mentors through those resources who could really help guide you and connect you. That was something that I wish I hadn't gone it alone. It would have saved me so much time if I'd used that resource to gather a mentor who could have really guided me and who would have believed in my vision and my dream. So that's really the biggest nugget that I would recommend for anyone.
Absolutely. And you know, along the line of resources, I've just come out with a new guidebook of all the different resources that I've come across interviewing 240 people on my show. And it's basically just a guidebook of, it's got right now, the list is at 38 phenomenal resources for veterans and spouses that are out there. Most of them free. The ones we talked about, the Small Business Administration program, the Boots to Business, all those are included in there, you know, because they've come up many times. So if you want that resource guide, it's not available on my website yet, but if you want me to send it to you, just send me an email to joe@veteranonthemove.com and I'll send it out. Well, eventually I'm going to post it out there on the website as a free giveaway on the front page. I just haven't gotten to it yet. So it's there. I'll send it to you. Just send me an email and I'll be glad to send it your way. All right, Chelsea, we're out of time. Great interview. I appreciate you sharing your entrepreneurial story, that success story. And we look forward to your future success with Troopster. So stay in touch and maybe come back on the show in a few years when you're like a well-renowned, famous nonprofit.
Here's hoping. Thanks so much, Joe, for having me on. And that book sounds really great. Again, I wish I'd had something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, send me an email and I'll send it to you.
Thanks.
All right. Well, these two veterans are Oscar Mike. As you can tell from listening to the Veteran on the Move podcast, interviews are a great way to tell your story and spread the word about your business. If you would like to get booked as a podcast guest, I recommend Interview Valet. You can check out Interview Valet at veteranonthemove.com/valet. Be sure to check out Thrive15.com, the world's premier online education platform that helps entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs learn how to start or grow a successful business. Start your free 30-day membership by going to Thrive15.com and use the promo code VETERAN. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.